Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. I beg your pardon, but since we all believe in tradition over here, I will gladly insert myself in the Enrico Colombato tradition and speak by staying seated. I thank you very much for this invitation, not just because you're getting me into the U.S., which is something I always love, particularly with this wonderful strong euro weak dollar thing, but also because it's a great honor for me to be here at the Philadelphia Society and to participate in your meeting and somehow to take advantage of the Society's mission and commitment. I have 15 minutes to speak about the future of conservatism and classical liberalism in Europe, and I can basically do that in 2 minutes just by saying that in Europe conservatives don't exist and classical liberals are few. That's basically it. But since I have to justify your inviting me and paying my way, I will go on for some 10 minutes more by providing you at first with a sketch of why the situation in Europe may be gloomy, and then giving you some reason for qualified optimism. Now, the situation in Europe may look very gloomy because, indeed, conservatives are a very rare bird in Europe. We have a tremendous mismatch in between, you know, the ideas of our movement and what are the parties of the political right. Basically, at least in central continental Europe, the political right is known for being anything but classical liberal or conservative in the American sense. A recent book by Grover Norquist, he is describing the Reagan Republican coalition as the Leave Us Alone coalition. Now, conservatives in Europe that cares about economic matters are basically technocrats or social engineers, and conservatives in Europe that care about value basically don't say leave us alone, but rather who like to, you know, just take control of the state and impose their own values over everybody else. We have a very bad tradition of the right wing in the last century, which is basically social democratic to the core. That's certainly true for France. That's in part true for, of course, it's true for anybody in France. But that's certainly true for Germany up to a certain extent. That's particularly true for Italy. You know, the number of public employees, leaving aside public expenditure per se, but just the number of public employees in Italy in between 1963 and 1981 basically tripled. And even though we had the strongest communist party in the West in our parliament, it wasn't the communists that were in government. Basically, we were governed by Christian Democrats, and the Christian Democrats were a highly secular party in spite of their own name. They were also the party of public spending, of increasing the sphere of activity of the state, of getting more and more people having the impression they could get a free lunch out of the Italian, basically northern Italian, taxpayers. The same may be said to libertarians. You know, libertarians are very, very few in Europe. They are just a teeny tiny minority. They didn't have much of a say, you know, in the last 50 years. And, you know, you cannot name really in a big, important European nation the name of a single politician that spoke with a free market libertarian leaning rhetoric. The one that got closest to that was actually an Italian, Silvio Berlusconi in 1994, and then afterwards in 2001 when he became prime minister for 5 years to follow, and he employed a fairly free market leaning rhetoric, you know. Asking votes with a promise of lowering taxation, releasing labor regulation, getting everybody the hope of becoming somebody in a free market environment rather than in a completely state-controlled economy. Well, the point is that even Berlusconi now, in his last electoral campaign, which is actually finishing tomorrow morning, well, it's actually the campaign finished yesterday, tomorrow morning we got election, he's completely back into the vocabulary of economic nationalism, which is particularly troublesome for us Italian because, you know, Berlusconi had many, many troubles, but he was one of the few people in our political environment who was completely tuned upon the need and the wills of the Italian population. At the very same time, the fact that the state developed, you know, towards a scope which is even unthinkable in the U.S., basically made European libertarians far more extremist and difficult to deal with in coalition buildings than they are in the U.S. Since we know, you know, how bad can be an economy which is almost completely run by Keynesian principles, we tend, as European libertarians, to be really out of the mainstream of political discussion. That's partially also due to the fact, you know, whereas over here you got a political mythology which is up to a certain extent libertarians, you know, our heroes in Europe are outsider to the political system, not the founding fathers of it. That's bringing coalition building within libertarians and conservative very difficult all over Europe, where conservative exists at all. That's clearly not the case of Italy, for example, where it's very, very difficult to find any politician which is consistently endorsing something that may sound like a traditional American conservative motive. Still, the situation seems to be embarrassing and troublesome and almost impossible to cope with, but there are good reasons for optimism. And I would like to point this reason for optimism basically into three different categories. Number one, it's the American contamination of political culture in Europe, which is the phenomenon you're basically witnessing when people visit ISI or other American think tank. The second, which is the most important phenomenon as far as spreading ideas is concerned all over the world, is the Internet and its development. And the third is the fact that basically because of the Internet, you know, changing people's mind and changing the world has never been cheaper than it is today. We have an increasing number of European organization, website, groups that basically believe what you do believe in. People in countries with very little classical liberal tradition like Italy or France, well, with a very important historic tradition of economists and thinkers, but very little movement tradition. People, of course, in Eastern Europe, people in Spain. Europe moved from a situation in which something like 10 years ago you basically had no think tanks in the American sense to a situation now where you can even see an inflation of think tanks. I mean, if you look to the website of an organization called the Stockholm Network, you know, they're listing something like 150 think tanks all over Europe, most of them being very poorly funded, most of them being severely understaffed, most of them still in a startup phase, but still, you know, it's a very impressive number, and it is all the more impressive given the fact we get there basically in 10 years. Blogging. Blogging is, you know, a very fashionable thing everywhere in the world. And you got a very big number of people in countries like Italy, indeed, that are developing blogging platforms upon which what you see being discussed is not the national news. It's not the Italian electoral campaign. It's not what Italian intellectual claims to be right and true in the press, but maybe, you know, very intense and heated discussion on the last issue of National Review. The Internet is lowering the cost for everybody to access information that were impossible to get before. It is Americanizing in a positive way our culture, but is also giving us the possibility to redeem our own classical liberal heritage. Professor Bach before named quite a few elements of European culture that are very strongly rooted in the classical liberal tradition. They're over there. We got a terrific amount of authors, of thinkers, of great economists, political theorists, and so on and so forth. It can contribute to our understanding better what could be, you know, the proper relationship in between society and the state, which is what most Europeans are unfortunately missing these days. It's over there, and the net, and the fact information is becoming more and more accessible, is basically making possible for people that would have been, you know, out of this world to enter it and to understand that really another way of conceiving politics is possible. I have a very little testimony of somebody who's running with many, many difficulties an organization that's now approaching its 50 years of life. Believe me, it's quite impressive from our point of view because when we started it, basically, our time horizon was 3 days. We didn't believe we could make it, and the history of similar organization in Italy was very unlikely to provide us with nice expectation for the future. As it was said before, you know, the American grassroots sentiment, I mean the developing bottom-up, is something we lack in most of European nations, and quite frankly, that impacts quite severely our non-for-profit organization as well. That's true, you got quite a few foundations or institutions that do public policy in Italy. Most of them are either directly affiliated with universities or funded directly by the state. What we saw in these 5 years was something we couldn't really forecast from the beginning. The first thing we saw is that, you know, really, among students particularly, and as it was said yesterday at the Atlas Foundation meeting, among the brightest of students, for the most, you got a very sincere need for something different. As you know very well, American contemporary quote-unquote liberalism or social democratic thinking is not exactly Marxism. It's many, many things, maybe philosophically refined, but it's not exciting. And that's providing a wonderful opportunity for people that have a different set of ideas to propose, to sell, and then can meet with young people enthusiasm that was previously given to very unworthy causes. We figured out that students not only have an interest in new ideas and developing new approaches to reality, but actually one of the worst features of our university system, which is its completely gerontocracy that basically makes it very feudal. You know, to step up in your career, you may be a good serf, and then when you're a good serf of a level, you can be a better serf of another level, and you're going up and up and up until basically your professor dies, and then eventually you can become a professor yourself. It's a very bad system, basically, because the way it works is that professors, you know, are, you know, not a lot of income. They're mostly personally unsecured, so they tend to select people that are typically a bit more stupid than they are, until you got a very stupid professor that just as a matter of chance select a very bright student because he cannot realize how bright he is. So not very good for having high-quality education, but in this terrible system, especially graduate students do really have a demand for doing things, for having the opportunity of attend seminars, for having the opportunity of working on papers, for being able to speak up, for being able to translate great thinkers, and so on and so forth, which is great for a free market think tank because you can describe it very aptly as child labor, and you can pay it as such. But apart from this, we also found that actually, in spite of the fact Italy has a very bad attitude towards donations, I mean, the only organization that really is up to, is able in getting private donation is the Catholic Church, and of course a teeny tiny free marketing tank cannot compete with that. Apart from that, you know, there is really a sense of a need for mobilizations in a few sectors of the population. It's not really widespread. You don't see the number of donors any American think tank have, but when you're providing people with an opportunity to get involved, you got a very nice and very important response. You see the same, for example, the situation I know best and I may testify about because there's no Spaniards in the panel, is Spain. Spanish libertarians built up really a miracle, which is this website, Libertad Digital, which is one of the best-read websites in the Spanish world and has a very clear-cut libertarian touch, you know, in providing news and commentaries about the current affairs in the world. So there is something developing over there. What we need as a next stage is basically find a way to leverage what it was very aptly presented before as a series of efforts basically made by single individuals being isolated in universities or in the journalistic world for that matter. So people are very effective in preaching but often do not have the resources and the possibility to build up on those. And the very few institutions, think tanks or small consumer groups, or small taxpayers association being all over Europe. We need basically to leverage that, as it was done in the past in the U.S., and for doing that, I think our first need at the current stage is not very much, of course, it's improving, on a matter of front. But I think what we need the most is really getting a more professionalized approach to this kind of matter all over the spectrum. It's somehow absurd that a think tank, no matter how small, is run by a 26-year-old person that graduated in political science that has basically no experience of management whatsoever, and that's my case. So don't tell my donors, but it's not exactly ideal. What we need to, and that's the same for many, many others. You know, the French free market think tank, the Institut Économique Molinari, is run by a wonderful French economist. The Spanish free market think tank, Instituto Juan de Mariana, is run by a wonderful Spanish economist. The three of us met for the first time actually in Auburn, Alabama, of all places, which tells you a lot about the status of networking in the European free market movements 5 years ago. So we need to leverage the potential which is over there now. And we need particularly to evolve towards a more professionalized, better organized ways of doing things. Will this have immediate political output? Not, it won't. But you know it very well from this country. You know, National Review was founded in the 50s, and you needed to wait up to the 80s to get President Reagan in the office. Europe, at least in Italy, that I can say for sure, we are even in a worse situation because basically, whereas politicians on the left are, you know, have basic skills to read and write, that's not true for politicians being elected with the right on the average. So a right-wing government is the worst thing for policy wonks you can really picture because they have problems in just understanding the title of papers you send them. It will be a very, very long quest. I'm particularly encouraged because even though I'm quite young, I started to be in this world when I was around 17. So it's 9 years, which is basically the most of my adult life. And I remember that when we met in the first time, I mean, there was basically in Italy, the number of classical liberals in Italy was, not really larger than this panel. Now, I cannot say that today the number of classical liberals in Italy is larger than this room, but it's certainly approaching that. What we saw in our own experience is that, Italians are very difficult. As you know, you may know a few, and they tend to be divisive. They have problems in working one with the other. If you bring three Italian classical liberal in the same room, each of us basically will believe that the other two are sold out. Especially when they agree. But institution building is key to get beyond this level. You know, to go beyond personalism and to start working together to the benefit of the new generation. We really see, at least at our institute, a great potential. It may sound small, but we have one curriculum a week coming to us for, you know, employment or internship or anything like that, which is, you know, a small result, but it's really was really unthinkable a few years ago. People are learning to speak up. People are developing new independent, spontaneous initiatives. People have now a great willingness to work together also because they understand how desperate the situation of our country and of Europe in general is. So I think we can say of the conservative and classical liberal movement in Europe what we can say of Europe of the 20th century, generally speaking. We had a frightening past. We have an uncertain present, but we have at the same time an hopeful future. Thank you very much for your attention.